and welcome back to Weird on the Rocks. This is a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. I'm your host, Katie. Today's episode is going to be a really fun one. I actually think that this has been probably my favorite episode to write and research ever. I was simultaneously writing a more serious and kind of sad episode while I was working on this one, and I would take breaks from that one to come work on this, and as nerdy as it sounds, I would get all excited to come back to this and just had a lot of fun with it. I tend to get kind of stuck while researching, and I can struggle a lot with the formatting and, you know, how to fit all the pieces together and present the information in the best way. But this one was just easy and a breeze to write for me. I really enjoyed it, so I hope you guys enjoy listening to it. Today, I'm going to be talking about Forest Fenn's Treasure. This was something that I heard about on the BuzzFeed Unsolved YouTube channel. I've mentioned them before. It's two guys who cover a lot of the same content that I do, but they are a lot more investigative about it and they tie in some humor. It's really awesome. You should check out their channel. But that's the first place that I ever heard about this. I was really shocked that I hadn't heard about it before since it's an ongoing thing and it's pretty new. So I immediately added it to my episode topic list and I'm really happy to finally be doing it. It's just a really fun and fascinating story and it really sounds like something out of an adventure book and kind of brings you back to childhood, which I think is what's so fun about it. Right now, there are a lot of heavy but very important things happening in the world. And so if this episode can just allow you to mentally escape for a little bit, then I'm happy to be that distraction for you. This episode is also awesome because there are some real-time updates that happened while I was literally in the middle of writing this, which has never happened before. So that's really cool. And that'll be at the end of the episode. You can find Weird on the Rocks on Facebook and Instagram at Weird on the Rocks Podcast, Twitter at Weird_Rocks, and the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, where, as always, you can find all the sources that I used in today's episode. Before we get going, I want to share another podcast promo with you guys. This one is from Jake and Stephanie over at the Stuck Between a Rock and Your 20-somethings podcast.
Hi, my name is Jake.
And I'm Stephanie.
And we are the hosts of the Stuck Between a Rock and Your 20-somethings podcast.
Each week, we talk about issues that young millennials face each day.
We're just two friends enjoying a drink and giving bad advice.
But also good advice.
Before we get into the good stuff, I want to share this week's beverage of choice. Tonight, I'm drinking something called the Treasure Chest. This has Bacardi rum, orange juice, pineapple juice, and soda water. It's delicious. It's very tropical tasting, really refreshing. And although this treasure has nothing to do with, you know, the tropics or pirates or anything, I thought it would just be the perfect cocktail to drink while I'm talking about a hidden treasure. All right, well, let's get into it. Cheers, and let's get weird. Grew up in Temple, Texas, and was always a very adventurous person. He spent many summers camping in Yellowstone National Park with his father and was a fishing guide in high school. However, Fenn always struggled academically and never felt like he had found his place. After barely graduating from high school, he felt lost and didn't feel smart enough to attend university like most of his friends. He decided to join the military and enlisted in the Air Force in 1950. He found that what he lacked in smarts, he made up for in hard work, saying, quote, "I told myself that if I was going to compete in that environment, I couldn't do it intellectually, but I could out-hustle all these guys," end quote. He eventually became a pilot and would spend 20 years in the Air Force, including a 348-day tour in Vietnam, where he flew 328 missions. While enlisted, Fenn often would spend his downtime by flying his plane around and exploring places such as Libya and the Sahara Desert. He also spent time assisting archaeologists in their digs. During these excursions, he would discover and take any ancient items that he found. Fenn also would buy sculptures from random artists, then cast them in bronze and sell them and trade them for Native American artifacts. An article written about Fenn on allthatsinteresting.com says he was, quote, a real-life Indiana Jones, end quote. He left the Air Force with numerous medals and honors, including a Silver Star, but also with a lot of trauma. He wanted to completely change his life and start anew and decided to move to New Mexico along with his wife and their two daughters. He liked New Mexico for its history and culture and its laid-back way of life. Once there, Fenn decided to start his own business. He wanted to go into something that would be highly lucrative for him and his family and settled on opening a luxury art gallery where he could sell high-dollar historical items. In 1973, he opened the Aerosmith Fenn Gallery with his business partner Rex Aerosmith, who was a Santa Fe antiques dealer. In an interview with Taylor Clark for the California Sunday Magazine, Fenn said, quote, "Let me tell you something that may startle you. I've never been interested in art. Art to me was always a commodity. If you say that out loud, everybody will throw rocks at you. It's like cussing in church. But I looked at it as a business instead of a love. I never loved art, and that's what gave me an advantage," end quote. Fenn began peddling to high-caliber business owners, celebrities, and public figures, including Steven Spielberg, Jackie Onassis, and Robert Redford. And he allowed any distinguished visitors to stay for free in the gallery's guest house. Fenn was incredibly good at getting the most bang for his buck and wasn't afraid of crossing some ethical boundaries when needed. At one time, Fenn bought the works of an unrecognized artist. Then he wrote an entire book about the person to make it seem as though they were a well-established and revered artist. Then sold their entire works for a huge profit once the public believed that the artist was worth a lot of money. Fenn was also a talented explorer and bargainer and was able to get his hands on valuable goods, including the relics he found while still in the Air Force. The items in the gallery included a mummified falcon from King Tut's tomb, Sitting Bull's peace pipe, and a spiritual centerpiece from Custard's Last Stand, which was worth $1 million. During its height, the gallery staffed 16 people, many who had their PhDs in art history, and it grossed $6 million annually. Forrest also said that he enjoyed working with people and loved to make his customers happy. Linda Durham, who worked for Fenn in the 70s, told journalist Taylor Clark, quote, "Men liked him because he was a Texas guy's guy. Women liked him because he was flirtatious and attractive and gave them presents. He had a case of jewelry and things, and I'd see him just give a woman a $2,000 necklace. Wow, I thought, that's amazing, a gift like that. But then the husband would end up buying several $50,000 paintings," end quote. Fenn loved finding artifacts and knowing that he was the first person to touch it in hundreds or thousands of years, and loved sharing that joy with others, and allowed visitors to the gallery to touch and hold most of the items. He thought that since these relics were from the earth, that they really had no true owner, and they belonged to everyone. In fact, in the same California Sunday Magazine article, in keeping with his top-notch hospitality and transparency, he extended a mind-blowing offer to journalist Taylor Clark, who was writing the article about him. Fenn retrieved a green bottle from a shelf and explained that when Jackie Kennedy stayed at the gallery, she left behind a $50 tip for the maid, a 2-page handwritten letter to Forrest, and a bottle of Korbel brandy with a few swigs left inside. During the interview, Fenn handed the bottle to the journalist and said, quote, "Now, you take a big swig. I'm going to punch you out. See, when I look at you taking a sip of this, I would think of you feeling like you're on a different plateau, because you're part of it now. Instead of being a spectator, you're a player," end quote. But despite Fenn's friendly demeanor and love of bringing joy to others, he's also been in some legal trouble over the years, and his home was even raided by the FBI, who were looking for illegally obtained relics, but nothing was found. Many have ridiculed his actions and criticized him for taking artifacts from historical locations, and he has even been referred to as, quote, "a looter with good lawyers and deep pockets," end quote. But the raid from the FBI and none of the legal allegations have ever turned into anything significant, and Fenn has never been charged with any crimes. In 1988, 15 years after opening the gallery, Fenn was diagnosed with kidney cancer and was given the prognosis that it was terminal. He had already been contemplating selling the gallery, and his diagnosis solidified that decision. Fenn said, quote, "My rule was I didn't want to do anything for over 15 years," end quote. He bought the San Lazaro Pueblo, a 160-acre piece of land that a local Native American tribe had inhabited, and began doing his own excavating there. But along with this new endeavor, Fenn also began reflecting upon his life of adventure and pondered what his legacy on this earth might be. He told journalist Taylor Clark, quote, "I thought I was gonna die. I kept asking the guy who gave me radiation what my chances were. And all he would say was, 'Mr. Fenn, you've got an uphill battle,'" end quote. This self-reflection led Forrest to writing an autobiography, which he titled The Thrill of the Chase, a memoir. The book included numerous short stories about his life, including stories from his early childhood and some of the traumatic things that he saw and experienced in Vietnam. While the bulk of the book was a normal story written by a sick man reminiscing about his life, the ending included a startling surprise. After a short story about a fly fishing trip, Fenn includes a picture of a treasure chest and explains that he has hidden a treasure somewhere. He also included a 24-line poem, which he says contains 9 clues to where the treasure is hidden. The poem reads, quote, "As I have gone alone in there, and with my treasures bold, I can keep my secret where, and hint of riches new and old. Begin it where warm waters halt, and take it in the canyon down, not far but too far to walk, put in below the home of brown. From there it's no place for the meek, the end is drawing ever nigh, there'll be no paddle up your creek, just heavy loads and water high. If you've been wise and found the blaze, look quickly down your quest to cease. But tarry scant with marvel gaze, just take the chest and go in peace. So why is it that I must go and leave my trove for all to seek? The answers I already know. I've done it tired and now I'm weak. So hear me all and listen good. Your effort will be worth the cold. If you are brave and in the wood, I give you title to the gold," end quote. Forrest knew that his death was imminent and wanted to leave something behind that could bring adventure and joy to others and allow him to touch the lives of those he was never able to meet. Then in the summer of 1988, doctors were able to remove his cancer-ridden kidney. He was now cancer-free. And although he now had a new lease on life, he still wanted to publish his book and hide his treasure. Over the next few years, he began to fill his treasure chest, which he described as a 10-inch wide by 10-inch deep by 5-inch high ornate antique lockbox of Romanesque design, weighing 42 pounds. Over time, he often removed items and added items to create the perfect collection of goods that would intrigue and dazzle the public. Some of these items included ancient figurines, a 17th century Spanish ring, American Eagle gold coins, gold nuggets, a vial of gold dust, 2 gold discs, jewelry including rubies, sapphires, and diamonds, a 2,000-year-old necklace, a copy of his own autobiography, and a turquoise bead bracelet. He estimated that the treasures were around $2 million. He also requested that the bracelet be returned to him upon discovery. When asked why he wants the bracelet back and why it's so important to him, he said, quote, "I was getting ready to close that treasure chest. I had it full. You know, there's 265 big gold coins. There's hundreds of gold nuggets and some beautiful little ancient Chinese jade carvings. I mean, wonderful things. But I wasn't in that treasure chest, and I looked around because I wanted to be in that chest with all that stuff. So I looked at that bracelet, and I really didn't want anything in there that was cheap. And this was silver, while nearly everything in that chest is gold. And I said, if I put that bracelet in there, something that I really enjoy and I'll miss a lot, now I can say that part of me is in that treasure chest. So I put it in there and I closed the lid and I just smiled and was very proud of myself. It belongs to history now," end quote. For the next 20 years, Fenn kept his treasure box in a safe at his home in Santa Fe. He often showed it to friends and family and told them of his plan to hide it in the mountains somewhere, but most just dismissed him. But in 2010, at the age of 80, Forrest Fenn did what he had been planning for over 20 years. Without telling his family, he ventured off and hid the treasure somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. He explained that the hiding of the box took only one afternoon. He only had to walk a few miles total, and that the only tools you need are the poem, a map of the Rocky Mountains, and basic geographic knowledge. After returning home, he continued to keep his adventure a secret until he had his book published. His own wife and daughters didn't even know of the treasure until they read his book themselves. Fenn only printed 1,000 copies of the book and gave most to a local bookstore. Soon, the thrill of the chase sparked public interest, and the bookstore had to put their remaining copies behind the counter because they were afraid of theft. At its highest point, the book was selling for close to $400 on Amazon. As more people began to hear about the book and the treasure, Fenn was featured on the Today Show and had write-ups in the Huffington Post and Newsweek. Soon, hundreds of people were visiting Santa Fe weekly, trying their luck at finding the treasure. Fenn soon began to communicate directly with searchers and answer some frequently asked questions. He said he wanted the treasure to be a challenge, but not impossible. He gave several more clues, such as, the treasure is between 5,000 feet and 10,200 feet elevation. It is not in a graveyard, outhouse, mine, tunnel, or cave. It's not associated with any structure, and it's either in Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, or New Mexico, and is at least 8.2 miles north of Santa Fe. Many began to scour through his book looking for additional clues he might have left in his stories. Fenn talked a lot about his summers spent in Yellowstone National Park and of his fondness for the area. Groups of people began flocking to the park thinking they could be the ones to find the hidden treasure. However, eventually, Tim Redd, the chief ranger at Yellowstone, made a statement about the treasure, saying, quote, "It's not finders keepers. You would have to turn it in and go through a governmental procedure to lay claim to it," end quote. This made many believe that Fenn would not have hidden the box in a national park. People soon started making videos and writing posts about their own journeys to find the treasure. A consensus was made that the 9 clues Fenn said were hidden in the 24-line poem were the following lines. Begin it where warm waters halt, take it in the canyon down, not far but too far to walk, put in below the home of brown. No place for the meek, the end is drawing ever nigh, no paddle up your creek, just heavy loads and water high. If you've been wise and found the blaze, but tarry scant with marvel gaze. Fenn responded by not saying if this was correct, but confirming that the single most important clue was line number 1, which read, where warm waters halt, because it gives a specific starting point. And soon, as with most everything, some people became obsessed. Numerous individuals moved to the Rocky Mountain area permanently, and many took out loans and sold belongings, including one woman who sold her house to fund her expeditions. There have also been several people who have faced legal troubles over the years. In 2013, a man searching for the treasure was arrested in New Mexico for digging underneath a roadside memorial in honor of someone who had died in a traffic accident on the highway. A couple was arrested in Yellowstone for using a metal detector and digging in the park. In 2018, a man was arrested for trespassing onto Fenn's property and trying to haul away a chest that he believed was the treasure. In 2019, a man named David Hansen filed a lawsuit against Forrest Fenn, claiming he had made fraudulent claims and deceived searchers, but it was dropped. And in 2020, a man named David Christensen had to be rescued by rangers in Yellowstone National Park after he tried to rappel 850 feet over a railing. He had to spend a week in jail, pay the rescue cost of $4,000, and was banned from the park for 5 years. Sadly, along with some legal issues, 5 people have also died in search of this elusive treasure. In 2016, Randy Bilyeu was found dead along the Rio Grande, and his ex-wife confirmed that he had been out looking for the treasure. In June 2017, 53-year-old Jeff Murphy was found dead in Yellowstone after falling 500 feet down a slope. His wife also confirmed that he was searching for the chest. Also in June of 2017, Pastor Paris Wallace was found dead 7 miles from his parked car along the Rio Grande, and family members said he had told them that he was looking for a hidden treasure. A month later, in July of 2017, 31-year-old Eric Ashby was found dead in Colorado's Arkansas River after a rafting accident. His parents confirmed that he had moved to Colorado the year prior to look for the treasure. And in March of 2020, 53-year-old Michael Wayne Sexton was found dead by rescuers. He had a friend who was injured but fully recovered and confirmed that they were on their second expedition looking for the treasure. In 2017, the New Mexico State Police Chief Pete Cassettis made a public statement asking Fenn to put an end to the hunt because he was endangering the public. Fenn had no comment. There are many who question Fenn's motives in creating the treasure hunt and believe that he is responsible for the deaths of these people. But others believe that these individuals are choosing to search for the chest and knowingly putting themselves at risk. Fenn has been very clear over the past 10 years that you don't need to achieve any daring physical feats to find the treasure. And things like rappelling down cliffs, using a boat, or intense digging are not required. In an interview with the New York Times in 2017, Fenn said, quote, "If someone drowns in a swimming pool, we shouldn't drain the pool. We should teach people to swim," end quote. Forrest has said that over the past 10 years, he has received hundreds of personal emails from the public, ranging from people threatening to kill him if he doesn't give them the coordinates, to people giving him sob stories and trying to guilt trip him into telling them where it's hidden. He says he always gives them the same answer, quote, "Just go back to the poem. The poem will take you to the treasure," end quote. As of 2018, over 350,000 people have searched for the treasure, and Fenn confirmed that 4 of the 9 clues had been solved and that someone had gotten within 200 feet of the treasure, according to a photo that the person sent him. There are several online chat forums and websites dedicated to the hunt where searchers can talk with others and compare theories, including chasechat.com, which has close to 50,000 posts. And while people like to share their ideas and discoveries, most keep some information for themselves so they can be the ones to find it. Most veteran searchers say that the line in the poem that most people fixate on is the line that says, "Put it in below the home of Brown," with Brown being capitalized. Many believe that this line points towards one specific location that can't be as open to interpretation as other lines in the poem. And if you find the home of Brown, you have solved the puzzle. One of the most popular places for people to look is the Lamar Ranger Station in Yellowstone, which in the 60s had a well-known ranger working there named Gary Brown. Another popular location is Brown's Canyon in West Yellowstone. And another line that brings a lot of confusion and different ideas is, "If you've been wise and found the blaze," with the word blaze having many different interpretations. Fenn himself said, quote, "I mean, there's people driving down the street looking for a blaze, because that's one of the clues, but you can't start in the middle of the poem and find the treasure. I don't think, I mean, it would be a miracle if someone did," end quote. And while some have taken the term very literally, looking for a fire pit or remnants of a fire, there are handfuls of different theories online. Fenn himself has addressed the term blaze before and has been clear in stating that the blaze is something you can only see if you're in the right place and have correctly followed all the other clues. He said, quote, "Rocking chair ideas can lead one to the first few clues, but a physical presence is needed to complete the solve. Google Earth cannot help with the last clue," end quote. And he has said many times that you will know it's the blaze when you see it. Many searchers have done extensive research on the Native American tribes that lived in the Rocky Mountain areas. Knowing that Fenn has a love for Native artifacts and mentions indigenous people many times in his book, It was discovered that blaze was a native term for a technique done where they would bend growing saplings at a 90-degree angle to mark their territory. So many searchers have looked for these types of growths while looking for the treasure. Some people have even gone as far as to memorize birth and death dates of people in Fenn's family tree, believing these numbers could correspond to specific coordinates. A group of amateur cartographers even created a map that used geographic data to narrow down the original search area from 27 million acres to 590,000 acres. There are also many out there who believe the entire thing is a hoax and no real treasure even exists. This belief is often held by discouraged former hunters who believe they were absolutely in the right place and the treasure wasn't there, so it must all be fake. But Forrest has always remained adamant that the treasure is definitely real and is in the same place he left it 10 years ago. Keeping up with the hunt is basically his full-time job, and he says he gets upwards of 120 emails a day and has received over 250,000 emails total. He tries to respond to all of them. He also has kept most of the letters sent in from searchers and keeps them in a filing cabinet in his garage. Fenn also believes that because so many people have uprooted their lives to finding this treasure, that he owes them something in return. He is very open to meeting searchers and answering their questions, and meets people over coffee or at a local bookstore at least once a week. Online, you can find dozens of interviews with him, and he enjoys interacting with the public and hearing their different theories. In the California Sunday Magazine article, journalist Taylor Clark talked to a woman named Katia Lucci, who moved from Maui to Santa Fe to look for the treasure full time. She has spoken to and met with Fenn several times and keeps in touch with him. She said, quote, "He's got a great poker face about it. He wants to be encouraging to people, but I know he doesn't want the game to be over. He's having so much fun with it. And this is kind of his last hurrah. He loves his wife, but without this, I just don't think he'd have as much to look forward to, you know? I think in a way that this is helping him keep going," end quote. Fenn himself has admitted that he's wondered before if hiding the treasure was the right thing to do, but he always convinces himself that it was. He said, quote, "In the back of my mind, I knew that if I was sorry tomorrow, I could go back and get it. The more I thought about that, I started laughing at myself. Like, no, I'm not going back to get it. It's probably the most profound thing I ever did in my life," end quote. When asked why he hid the treasure in the first place, Fenn has always explained that he wanted to bring joy and adventure to others. After being diagnosed with kidney cancer and looking death in the eyes, he gained a new lease on life and wanted to share his findings with the world. He also wanted people to get back outdoors and enjoy nature, something that many of us have become disconnected with. He said, quote, "We are an obese society today, and I wanted to get them out into the sunshine, let them turn over a rotten log and see what's under it," end quote. And many avid searchers have described the treasure hunt as magical and like something out of a book or movie. Many have expressed that for them, the treasure is much more about the journey and the experiences they have had along the way, more than the treasure itself, which is what Fenn seems to have wanted all along. So when I first started researching and writing this episode, I was writing it in a format to leave it open-ended and really implore you guys to do your own research and maybe even, you know, go look for the treasures yourselves. I watched numerous YouTube videos of people documenting their searches, and I myself was even daydreaming about, you know, going and looking. And I was telling my husband that after travel restrictions have lifted, that I wanted to go to Yellowstone and look for this treasure. I totally was drinking the Kool-Aid. I was wrapped up in this. It really just has this magical appeal to it, and it makes you feel like a kid from some adventure book you read growing up. But for the first time since doing this podcast, this story has come to a conclusion literally as I was writing this episode. On June 6th, 2020, 16 days before this episode comes out, the treasure was found. Forrest Fenn himself posted on the blog Thrill of the Chase that after 10 years, it has been found. At this time, the person who found it and the location have not been made public, sadly. The statement that Fenn posted said, quote, "It was under a canopy of stars in the lush forested vegetation of the Rocky Mountains and had not moved from the spot where I hid it more than 10 years ago. I do not know the person who found it, but the poem in my book led them to the precise spot. So the search is over. Look for more information and photos in the coming days. End quote. Fenn also said that the person who found it is a male from the eastern United States, and its discovery was confirmed by a photo of the treasure that this man sent to him. Of course, this discovery has created a frenzy online. The forum chasechat.com is full of posts about the discovery, ranging from people happy for the finder to those who doubt that it was actually really found. Many are now sharing their finds, as they call them, with detailed steps to where they think the treasure was found. Many who live in other parts of the world and were never physically able to search believe that they have the correct find and are posting their solutions as insurance to prove they were correct when the actual location is announced. And many are feeling extreme disappointment and jealousy that they weren't the ones to find this elusive treasure. On June 13th, the New York Post released an article talking to a woman named Miriam DeFronzo, who was literally in the middle of a search in New Mexico when she heard the news. She said, quote, "I was completely distraught," end quote. Another woman named Barbara Anderson, who was a lawyer in Chicago and has gone on 20 expeditions herself, told the Post, quote, "This is all really heartbreaking. When I heard the news last week, I just freaked out," end quote. And Barbara Anderson states that she is actually responsible for the discovery. She claims that her computer was hacked and that her correct solve was stolen, and that the man who hacked her computer has been sending her threatening emails and texts over the past few months. On June 8th, 2 days after the announcement of the discovery, Anderson filed a lawsuit against the unknown man and Forrest Fenn. The lawsuit states, quote, "This person found the precise location of the Forrest Fenn treasure not because he solved the puzzle, but because he intentionally hacked Anderson's computer and emails and stalked Anderson physically at the location site," end quote. Barbara Anderson believes the treasure was in New Mexico because Fenn posted a photo of himself wearing a hat with a hole in it, and the hole was the shape of the state. Although, of course, the state and the exact location of the treasure still has not been revealed yet. In an ABC News article posted on June 15th, they talked to individuals who have had to rescue searchers over the years, and they have expressed their relief that the search is over. Dan Johnson, spokesman for Dinosaur National Monument, said, quote, "We are very happy," end quote. At Dinosaur National Monument, searchers have had to be rescued while rafting on the Green River, after getting injured, and after crashing their snowmobiles. Johnson said, quote, "There's always the ones who won't say that that's what they're actually doing, but we definitely had some inclination that that's what was going on," end quote. The discovery of the treasure has also only increased the skeptics and those who believe the entire thing is a hoax. While some believe that there was never a treasure, others believe there was, but that Fenn went out and got it, and it wasn't discovered by a stranger. There are theories that Fenn, who is now 89, is getting old and tired of keeping up with the emails and meetings with searchers and wanted the entire thing to come to an end. And some have even gone as far as to suggest a conspiracy that Fenn was advised to announce the discovery to draw attention away from the Black Lives Matter movement. Many veteran searchers are doubting the truth and won't believe the treasure was found until there is definitive proof. Terry Kasberg, who is part of a Facebook group for searchers and has spent 4 years on his own quest, told the New York Post, quote, "Why aren't you showing us the picture? Everyone is really concerned because there is a real lack of transparency. It has left everyone in a depressed state of mind," end quote. And Linda Bilyeu, the ex-wife of Randy Bilyeu, who died while searching for the treasure, told Denver's Westworld publication, quote, "I believe he never hid the treasure. He needed attention, and this is how he got it. Fenn needed more attention, which is why he said the treasure has been found with no proof," end quote. But Fenn himself sticks to his word of the last 10 years that the treasure is absolutely real, and told CBS Denver, quote, "I congratulate the thousands of people who have participated in the search and hope they will continue to be drawn by the promise of other discoveries," end quote. And when asked about how he feels, he said, quote, "I feel halfway kind of glad, halfway kind of sad," end quote. Okay, well, that's it for today's episode. I usually end these with some kind of, you know, question for you guys. And I guess the only thing to think about with this one is whether you believe the treasure is real or not at this point. I definitely think it's real and that Forrest really did hide it. He definitely has done some questionable things over the years, such as taking historical artifacts. And I'm not saying that he hasn't been involved in, you know, maybe some shady business deals and unethical ways of, you know, getting money. But for the most part, I do find him to be very authentic and genuine. I watched a lot of interviews with him and he always seems very calm and open to answering questions and, you know, really getting to know people. And he enjoys seeing the challenge that people were going through to find this treasure. I think that after he was diagnosed with cancer, it really made him question the idea of legacy and think about what kind of impact he, you know, would leave on the world after he died. He's known for allowing people to touch and hold the relics that he owns and wanting to share that joy with others. And I think this treasure hunt was his way of doing that, but on a bigger scale where anybody could participate. While, yes, it's obviously sad that people, you know, have died in the search of the chest, the majority of people have had positive experiences. And I believe if you are willing to go look for this, you know the risk that you're taking. And I don't think that Forrest should be responsible for any of those people's deaths. They were adults. They knew what they were doing. And most of them did die doing things that he said you don't need to do to find the treasure. In most of the YouTube videos I watched and posts I read, people talk about how awesome the hunt has been for them and that they did things they never normally would have done and really got out of their comfort zone. I watched this video of 5 college-aged boys who did a week-long road trip looking for the treasure. They turned off their phones. They used old school maps and, you know, had to teach themselves how to read the maps. And they said it was the best thing they've ever done. And it was a really good bonding experience for them. I also watched a video of a father and son who have gone on multiple searches and they talk about how exciting and magical the whole thing is for them. And the son said every night before a trip, he can't sleep and it feels like Christmas morning. I think that these types of stories are exactly why Forrest did the whole thing. And, you know, he just wanted people to experience the outdoors like he did growing up. Sadly, I think a lot of the people who are casting doubt and skepticism are searchers who feel jilted out of the prize. And honestly, I think are just feeling angry and jealous and are in denial. Now, I myself have never dissected the poem. I've never searched for the treasure myself. So my opinion really doesn't matter. But I think that a lot of the people were overthinking the poem. Fenn himself said that it's difficult but not impossible and you don't need to be a smart person to figure it out. I found many people online who went into literally every letter in the poem, made codes and anagrams out of them, looked at the words diagonally and backwards and made charts and graphs and just went into so much work. The woman, Miriam DeFonso, who was interviewed for the New York Post, picked out the word rainbow from Fenn's book and created anagrams from every single line in the poem, finding any mentions of color words, and used her search based off of the colors of the rainbow. She got stuck at the word blaze, as many do, but used Google Earth to look at the area she was searching from above, and she saw that the switchbacks of the long curved road that she was following looked like they formed the shape of flames. Now, while this is very cool, and she obviously spent a lot of time and energy working on this, Fenn said himself that Google Earth will not help you. And I think a lot of people just kind of completely disregarded things that Fenn was saying and thought too hard about the poem and, you know, got themselves off track. I mean, but who knows? Since the correct solve still hasn't been announced, any guess is as good as the next. And I might just be, you know, putting my foot in my mouth right now and it's going to be revealed that it was a very detailed and abstract solve. But I just don't really think it was. I think it was something a lot more simple that people were kind of overlooking. I'm really hopeful that some new information will, you know, come out about this soon. Even if the person who found it doesn't want their name released, which I totally understand, people would be coming for them. Perhaps Fenn can post a photo of him with the treasure to prove that it was really found, or maybe he can show that he got that turquoise bracelet back. And then people can kind of let this rest and leave the poor old man alone. I really do think, though, that this entire thing is just so cool and truly is magical. That word keeps coming up, and that's really how it feels. And I definitely share Fenn's sentiment about its discovery, about, you know, being happy and glad, but also kind of sad because it's over. And I think the idea of this treasure somewhere out there in the woods, you know, really did give a lot of people hope, and it brought a lot of joy to people and made them look forward to something. So it does kind of make me sad for all those people that have spent, you know, so many years and money and time finding this treasure. And I hope the person that found it is, you know, realizes how lucky they are and really appreciates what they have. As always, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Had you ever heard of Fenn's treasure before? Did you see the news that it was found? Do you think it's real? Do you think it's a hoax? It's definitely a fun story to think about and to research. And I'm so curious what's going to come of it. Part of me kind of wants to dive deep into the poem and try and find a solve and, you know, compare it to where it actually was found, if they ever do release that information, and see if I was in the correct vicinity at all. Who knows? There's just so many possibilities. I think it's just really cool to think about. As always, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate every single one of you who take the time out of your lives to listen, and I hope you're all staying safe and healthy out there. All right, until next time, cheers and stay weird.
That was a Titancast episode.